Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
In an address on Russian state television yesterday, President Vladimir Putin confirmed the use of this new intermediate-range ballistic missile on a strike against Ukraine. He also sent a warning to the West, saying the use of this type of missile was a direct response to Ukraine's use of, he said, American and British long-range weaponry. He said he believes Russia now has the right to use similar ballistic missiles against these countries. Well, for more on this, I'm joined now by Jeremy Bone, BBC International Editor. Jeremy, thank you for being with us today. So this ballistic missile was aimed at the Dnipro region. It was believed to be the first of its kind used in the conflict. Then comes the threat, which I've just outlined. Putin believes he has the right now to use this weapon against his targets in the West. How significant a development do you think that is?
I think it's significant. I think it's important to take Putin seriously. Because he has rattled his sabers, particularly the nuclear saber, really more than once since the full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Some people say, look, it's just huffing and puffing. He's not going to do it. But you don't know that. We do not know that. So I think it is important to take what Putin says seriously. And while he may not carry out these threats anywhere soon, if he got to a spot where he felt his back was against the wall, well, you never know.
But I'm sure this response was anticipated by the United States and the UK. I mean, should we assume that they're ready for him to make these threats, the provision has been made?
Well, I'm sure if the intelligence services who follow these things and others didn't think that Putin would respond in some kind of a way, then, frankly, they should be fired. Mm-hmm. Because it's been very clear what's been going on. Zelensky has been asking for this for ages, and it became clear, and the Americans and the British didn't make any secret of the fact that they changed their policy. So, of course, he's the sort of man who does want to respond to these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. And how powerful is it, this intermediate range ballistic missile? How much do we know about its capabilities?
Well, it seems to be, it got through. It wasn't hit by their air defense systems. If it's a new experimental thing, they probably don't have all that much about it. I mean, I think the thing about Putin that you have to be really aware of is that we don't really know what he's going to do next. I mean, part of deterrence is sowing uncertainty in the minds of the people on the other side. And perhaps even Putin doesn't quite know where all this is going, but he is putting some threats in the bank.
Mm. When we hear Ukrainian MPs responding to these threats from Putin, they'll say, we've had this before. He's never acted on it. This is to encourage more support and more military equipment from the United States and the UK. Can we take it that, given that it would seem the UK, the French, certainly the United States now are allowing these long-range weapons to be used by Ukraine, that they're calling Putin's bluff in a way?
Yeah, I think they're pushing more. There's been a if you think back to the very beginning of this invasion, well, almost a couple of years ago now, more than a couple of years ago, I should say, nearly 3 years ago, to start with, the Ukrainians were complaining because the Germans sent them only ballistic combat helmets and various kinds of protective clothing, and they weren't getting the kind of serious weaponry that they wanted. And step by step, slice by slice, they've got more and more of what they wanted. They weren't going to get tanks. They got tanks. They weren't going to get fighter aircraft, F-16s. They got the F-16s. They weren't going to be allowed to hit Russia with long-range missiles from inside Ukraine. They're now being allowed to do that. So I think there is this feeling that actually Putin might be a bit of a windbag on these things. But as I said at the outset of our chat now, he's the leader of a country which is very much at war, and you have to take what he says seriously because you never know, he might do these things.
Mm-hmm. What's your own assessment of Joe Biden's decision, the twilight weeks of his presidency, to allow the use of the long-range weapons from Ukraine into Russia? What do you think he is saying there?
Well, perhaps he's trying to put a few new facts on the ground in advance of Trump coming in, because it's becoming clear that Trump does not believe, like in the way that Biden has, that it's important to keep sending tens of billions of dollars worth of gear, military equipment, to Ukraine. I think the Ukrainians would probably be justified in thinking, for goodness sake, if you're going to do this, why not do it 6 months ago?
Mm-hmm. Because we had some analysis on the program that suggested that the Ukrainians and the Ukrainian president has adjusted really to the reality that once Trump comes in, there will be ceasefire talks. There will be talks to try and resolve this, which will ultimately mean for them ceding ground.
Well, I'm not certain that he's got that into his own head at the moment. I think it would be the end of him as a president if that's what he decided to do after everything that he said. I think that Russia as well is on the, you know, is pushing forward. Maybe they don't want to stop at this particular point. So I would not assume at all that Trump can just come in, wave his magic wand, get a ceasefire leading to some kind of an agreement whereby, whereby the Ukrainians agree to give up the 20% or so of their country that is presently occupied by the Russians.
Jeremy, if the Americans say, look, we're not going to supply you with any more weapons, we're done here. Let's say Trump makes that decision. Can the Ukrainians carry on? Can they keep pushing back without that level of support?
Well, not if they don't get it from somewhere else. Someone else, no. And the only other possibility is the Europeans. And I don't think they have the capacity to do that. So, you know, it could be that that Zelensky will just have to accept that essentially they've lost, but they can pull a few irons out of the fire and make the loss less bad. Mm-hmm. Maybe that will be Trump's answer because, you know, up to now, despite vast amounts of military aid, the Ukrainians have got some real significant weaknesses, not least, it's a huge country, but it doesn't have many people, something like 40 million. The fighting is done by, you know, 99.9% men. They have not organized themselves to have regular tranches of conscription coming in. So the frontline units are under enormous pressure. So, yeah, there's a lot of exhaustion and war weariness in Ukraine. And I think Ukrainians might be relieved and maybe they'd be prepared to trade some land. If you look back through Ukrainian history, the borders of Ukraine over the centuries have varied quite a bit and they've moved backwards and forwards.
Now let's move to the Middle East, Jeremy. The International Criminal Court announcing that they're going to issue these warrants for the arrest of the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, his former Defence Minister Yoav Gallant as well for alleged war crimes. Can you give us your take on the international reaction to that news?
Well, I think it's been pretty predictable. You could have guessed it, that the Americans would condemn it in round terms, which they've done. The Israelis themselves, Israeli politicians of all sides, have come together and said, this is absolutely disgraceful. It's wrong. It's a capitulation to terrorism. They've also said it's anti-Semitic. Netanyahu said that. He's compared the Dreyfus case, the end of the 19th century, which is a well-known episode of anti-Semitism in France. So all that was predictable. The fact is that the 124 signatories to the Rome Statute that set up the ICC are obliged to execute an arrest warrant under the terms of that agreement. Now, they don't always do that. Putin has an arrest warrant against his name, but he was able to go to Mongolia, which I believe is a signatory, but Mongolia is a border country with, you know, a lot of influence, I think, from Russia. So Viktor Orban of Hungary has said, Netanyahu, come and see us. We guarantee you won't be arrested. But every European Union country is a signatory. The UK is a signatory. Ireland has already stated its position very clearly, so have a few other countries, the Dutch, the Italians, and others. The British too. So, well, with a few hedges around it. So I think that, yeah, it was pretty predictable the way it would go.
I just wonder, does it change how some countries will interact now with Israel? I just see the French Foreign Ministry statement in the last couple of minutes, which is very careful, I think. The ICC arrest warrants for Israeli officials are not a judgment. They're a formalisation of an accusation. The Germans saying that their relationship in terms of weapons supplies won't change. Do you expect there will be any fallout in that regard?
In terms of weaponry?
In terms of weaponry, international relations, the warmth of support, the level of support for Israel in light of this decision by the ICC?
There has already been some. The Dutch have said, I believe, that they will keep diplomatic connections to you know, what's necessary. In other words, a fairly cold relationship, I'd say. I mean, the Western countries are in a real difficult bind on this one. It was dead easy for them to say, Putin, of course, entirely right to issue an arrest warrant. Omar al-Bashir of Sudan, the same sort of thing when that was done. But Israel is a Western ally. Many Western governments are committed to supporting Israel, yet they also speak greatly, repeatedly, about the importance of upholding what they call the rules-based international order, which many countries in the so-called global south think is a fabrication, doesn't exist, because if there are rules, they're rules that benefit the West and nobody else. So this will, I think, be a test of their adherence to this fidelity that they have stated to international norms. And because there will be plenty of people queuing up to say, if they don't do that, well, it's a special case for Israel, isn't it? You treat them differently.
Jeremy, always great to talk to you. Thank you very much for taking the time. That's Jeremy Bowen, the BBC's international editor. And I see Benjamin Netanyahu in the last few minutes thanked the Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban for his show of moral clarity, as Netanyahu said, for inviting him to visit Hungary despite the ICC arrest warrant. Coming up next, our reporter Una Kelly will have the very latest on what's been happening on the campaign trail.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.